Navigating Developmental Delays Podcast is a podcast hosted by a pediatrician and a pediatric occupational therapist.
As the hosts, we have chosen to stay anonymous due to privacy concerns. We would like to be able to speak freely and give you our honest opinions on the pressing issues we wish to address in a variety of settings and a variety of circumstances. We recognize that there are numerous additional burdens placed on families of kids with developmental delays to get the basic needs of their children met.
Both in healthcare system as well as the educational system, if you don't speak the language of advocacy or have an advocate, you don't get the same experiences. If you're not as well versed in the rights and protections guaranteed to you from the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, you don't often get the educational services you're entitled to.
In healthcare, if you don't understand how insurance works or what services you are entitled to under state law and your healthcare plan, often it is a struggle to get the basic necessary services your child would benefit from.
Sadly, there are numerous hoops parents have to jump through to get their children the minimum healthcare and therapy services they need. Our podcast aims to bridge that gap in care. We want to provide you with some resources, ideas, and some information to help you make your existing job a little easier. We're here to support you and talk about issues that matter to you. We're constantly humbled by your inspirational attitude, your perseverance, and your determination to help your children achieve the best life possible. We want to be part of your efforts, and as your hosts, we feel that working in pediatrics is a privilege that we are very fortunate to have. We're so amazed and awed at the tireless parents out there who work painstakingly with their child's advocates. Please think of us as part of your extended network. We also want to stress that talking to us or listening to the podcast is not a substitute for medical advice or therapy advice. We will be speaking about general issues, and we advise you seek out answers for your kids' individual medical needs and questions from their pediatrician and your family pediatrician.
We will not be addressing individual questions. If there is enough interest in a particular topic, we will do our best to address it in general terms in future podcasts. So I'm Dr. Hamilton. I'm a board-certified pediatrician with more than a decade of experience. My areas of interest in pediatrics are autism and ADHD. I'm also interested in how to help parents become advocates for their kids in the healthcare system as well as the educational system.
And I'm Ms. Burr, a pediatric occupational therapist who has over 15 years of experience working with kids with delays as well as children with fine motor and sensory difficulties due to complex medical issues like Down syndrome and autism spectrum disorder. I own my own practice and I attend school meetings as an educational advocate and advocate for inclusion. Welcome to Navigating Developmental Delays Podcast with Dr. Hamilton and Ms. Burr. Being a parent is an amazing experience, and it's a life-changing in wonderful ways, but it's also an all-consuming experience. Parenting is hard, and being a parent of a child with developmental delays brings unique challenges.
COVID-19 has brought an unprecedented challenge for adults and children. As parents, we have never faced something like this before. As healthcare workers and pediatric workers, we have never faced anything like this before in our lifetime. We want to talk specifically about some things you can focus on today that are constructive measures to take with your children in this time. There are two parts of today's podcast. We will be talking about kid safety, and in the second part, we will be talking about ways to focus on staying healthy mentally and physically during this challenging time.
So with part one, we're going to talk about kid safety. And, you know, we know this COVID-19 is not going away anytime soon, which brings about the idea of masks. Knowing that, you know, we're going to be wearing masks for a while. If we could just talk a little bit about what type of mask do you think is more beneficial for families? You know, there's so many different options out there. So Dr. Hamilton, could you speak a little bit about what you find with surgical masks versus cloth masks?
Sure. So I think that as a parent, I would count it a win if you can get your child to wear any mask. Yeah. So I think when you talk about, you know, the personal protective equipment that kids need, masks are the most important. A lot of schools are requiring masks for return to school. Some schools do not, but a lot of stores also require that people be wearing masks to enter the store. And just for your own kids' safety, if you can get them to wear any mask, consider that a win. But in terms of effectiveness of masks, the cloth masks are usually not as effective as the disposable surgical masks. Now, okay. It's hard sometimes for parents to find, you know, the other masks. So it's also hard for kids to wear the surgical mask in the beginning. They feel kind of scratchy. So two important things to remember is if you start your kids off with getting used to like a soft cloth mask, you can always transition them later to a surgical mask. But the things to look for in a mask is basically you want to have a molded nose piece that gives you a tight fit around the nose. And it's very important that the mask have a good fit for your children. If the mask is loose and hanging down, you know, underneath their nose, it's not doing a good job protecting them.
Sure.
And I don't know what you found with your kids, Erin, but a lot of times if you loop the earpiece, if you loop the ear elastic a little bit around the ear, you can make it a little bit tighter fit. So you're able to get a little bit of a tighter fit. Some of the cloth masks have like a bead or an adjustable part that you can make the mask tighter or looser. So the key is to have a well-fitted mask, both at the nose and around the chin and the cheek area.
Okay, great. Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people using the beads now to help tighten the masks, which I think is, you know, a great adaptation. You know, I think there's been a lot of discussion out there, and I've noticed just on some of our parenting boards is the idea of a shield versus a mask. Is there one that you find as better protection?
I definitely think that a mask is superior protection compared to a shield. I think that the shield is better than no protection, but the CDC really recommends masks. And masks, we know, protect your you know, nasal passages and other areas from being exposed to the particles a lot better. The other thing I would say is if a child doesn't wear like any masks, I would really focus on trying to get them to wear a mask. And I have some questions for you about that, Erin, in a second. But I think that if you wear a shield, face shield, over your mask, that's a way to preserve your mask if you don't have a lot of them. And the other thing, we know that the virus can enter through the eyes. You know, the eyes are also mucous membranes. So think about maybe a way to protect your children's eyes as well. I think it's important, you know, the eye exposure is lower risk than the other exposure, you know, getting the virus through your nose or your mouth or other surfaces on your face, but it's still a risk. So considering some eye protection in addition to whatever kind of mask you can get your children to wear is important, but I think the surgical masks are better protection compared to cloth masks. The N95 masks, which are difficult to get, or the KN95 masks, which you have to look and see if it's approved by the FDA, you know, in terms of use for that. A lot of them are not approved by the FDA, but then we're getting into higher level of PPE, and I think it's important. I would just start with the basics, just having a mask.
Okay. So if you were really, you know, telling parents an optimal level of coverage for school, it sounds like really a surgical mask and then either some goggles or a face shield on top of that for coverage.
Right. I think it's going to be really challenging to get older kids to wear a face shield, you know, but if teachers and other people might be wearing it, you know, that might make it a little bit more palatable. Now, I've seen some people, you know, some smaller kids wearing face shields, and some of them thought they were really fun. Someone told me, I'm an astronaut.
Aww.
And so I think that it might be more fun for kids to just get them used to that.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great starting point for a lot of kids. And I know in the clinics we go to, sometimes just not seeing, you know, providers' faces and teachers' faces are a little bit difficult right now. So if it's a starting point for families, I think that's a great point.
Right. It is really challenging because when you're seeing a child, they, you know, read how your facial expressions are. So it's really hard when they can't see your face.
Right.
So I think that does make it really challenging even to establish rapport and, you know, in the clinical settings, it makes it harder for them.
Do you have any input on the masks that do have that little clear barrier so that children can see someone's mouth?
I do not know if a lot of those masks have been vetted in terms of how they are, what kind of protection they give. I think for people that rely on lip reading, I think that it's very hard to not have something that allows you to do that.
Sure.
So I think it's a difficult situation, and I don't have a great answer for that because I don't know how effective some of those clear masks are, but I understand for a lot of people that is a necessity that they need.
Right, right. Yeah, those are hard choices to make. So You mentioned eye protection, and we've talked about masks. What about gloves?
So I think gloves is, I think the best thing that you need to do is, you know, good hand washing, using hand sanitizer is important. What I see happen with gloves are obviously an additional level of protection. I find people sometimes with gloves get careless because they're wearing gloves and then they're touching gloves everywhere. They feel like they can touch everywhere because they have gloves on.
Sure.
And you still have to be careful of where you touch, and you have to sanitize your hands. You have to wash your hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Very good.
So I want to ask you a question, actually. I know for a lot of kids, I know you work with a lot of kids with sensory challenges, and I think it's very hard to wear a mask. So what are suggestions you have for parents about how to get your child to wear a mask when they have a hard time, you know, might be having some sensory difficulties, to get them used to wearing a mask? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, and I, you know, someone was having a discussion with me the other day, and I thought it was a great point that, you know, our families of children with disabilities are very used to having to take a skill that maybe other families take for granted, such as bathing or toothbrushing, and break that skill down, you know, so that their child is able to do that successfully. So I think that our families are used to this and have superhero powers when it comes to being able to teach their child a certain skill. Right. So, you know, I do encourage families to look at it from that viewpoint and embrace that you're already equipped to work on this. It's just one more thing that, you know, you're going to be able to overcome.
Right.
I think practice is always the best way when we talk about any child with any sort of sensitivity.
Right.
The goal might be that you wear the mask for 30 seconds at first, you know, and while you're getting to watch your favorite show or read your favorite book with mom or dad, you know, and then slowly build up from 30 seconds to 2 minutes to 5 minutes and go from there. I think there's a lot of great resources out there right now for families, including social stories. You know, Sesame Street has jumped on board and made videos. And just, you know, being an example for your children of wearing the mask and showing them that, you know, they'll be able to tolerate it since you're able to tolerate it.
So you're recommending doing a preferred activity or getting some kind of preferred reinforcer for wearing a mask and making that a more preferred thing than to wear a mask. So,
absolutely. Okay. I think anytime, you know, you have something that's challenging, you need to pair it with a preferred task or some sort of incentive at first, just so, you know, you can get your child engaged and excited about it. So whether that's, you know, playing with trains with you or getting to go somewhere that they really enjoy while they wear the mask, it definitely needs to be strength-based and motivating.
Right. No, I agree. That's a good point. So any suggestions for once you have a mask on, how do you teach kids not to touch their faces and eyes?
I think that's, again, a lot of nice practice. There's some games out there that we could play. You know, if you don't touch your face after 5 minutes, there's a reward at the end of that. Timers are also a wonderful thing to use. Visuals are known to, you know, help a lot of our children with developmental delays. So use of a timer or some sort of countdown could be beneficial for that.
Yeah, I think that would be a good tool to add. With hand washing, is there, I know a lot of times there's a lot of information on social media about good hand washing. I find that if you have a consistent way to do it every time, kids usually get more in the habit. Do you have any suggestions?
Sure. You know, and I think a lot of kids that we see enjoy that water play. So that's a great way to start introducing some of that, is just going over to the sink, start playing, start singing some songs, you know, doing a little dance while we're washing our hands. That's always fun. And then again, there's great little videos about germs and why we wash our hands and for how long. There's lots of activities out there as well to show how germs are being able to stay on our hands when we don't wash our hands.
Right. I think that visual, sometimes just seeing it, I think is helpful for kids. Also, I think that, you know, the other thing to point out is that we know that, you know, recent studies have shown that kids can transmit the virus as well as adults after age 10. And younger kids, even though they may not transmit the virus as well, we know that they have higher viral load. They have higher number of virus particles, you know, in their secretion. Right. So we don't really, a lot of this is going to be things that we discover in the future. So a lot of this is like early stages of research. We don't really know what all of this means, but I think just really, really want to emphasize masks really protect your kids from other people. They, you know, if someone is sick, they protect you, they protect other people from your secretions. But for kids, you know, we really, really want to make sure that you're having your kids wear a mask and if possible, some eye protection as well.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. And as you mentioned in the beginning that, you know, we didn't know a lot at first, but there's been a lot of research out there now. And so the evidence is pretty overwhelming.
Right.
And again, as we discussed, this is a long-term situation. And so if you can practice it even just in little increments right now,
right.
You know, have that goal of within a month that you're going to be able to have the mask on for 10 minutes or for 20 minutes and,
right.
and be realistic about that goal.
Right, right. No, I think it's important, you know, to have the realistic goal and then just start working on it little by little, just start chipping away at it, you know, just introduce it.
So we've talked a little bit about, you know, kid safety and how to keep our families safe. I want to talk a little bit about the mental health challenges that we're mm-hmm. all facing during this pandemic. Obviously, it's changed our lives in unprecedented ways. It's very stressful being a parent at any time, but especially now when we feel like such a lack of control over so many issues. You know, people are just trying to make it through the day one step at a time. So let's talk a little bit about that and kind of what some of the things that you're seeing and some of the strategies we can offer to families.
Sure. With the pandemic, I think there's a deep sense of lack of control. There's a lack of structure. There's social isolation. I really find with kids with developmental delays, all the usual school and community supports that are lifelines for parents to survive day to day, all those supports are gone. Being a parent is stressful enough, but there is stress compounding the baseline stress all parents face. You know, I read in a study once that being a parent of a child that has a significant developmental delay, you have the same levels of stress as someone with PTSD. So
wow.
It's significant. And, you know, you're just trying to get through your day and your baseline stress levels are so heightened and having all these supports kind of taken away because of the pandemic, it really presents a significant challenge on that already high baseline level of stress. So, you know, when you have a child with a developmental delay, you're facing now the lack of support and services, that lack of control, that lack of structure. You know, so one of the things that we just want to say to our listeners is these are just suggestions. We just, if you find something helpful, you can use that idea. If it's too much, don't worry about it. We just want to support you however we can, and these are just some suggestions.
Sure. I think that's a great point. Whenever we're talking about anything with the pandemic, it's new, and I think both adults and children, you know, have some anxiety when we're talking about masking and mm-hmm. PPE and just the different social distancing protocols that we're going to have to face. And it's a very fine line between educating ourselves and learning what's safe and practicing that, but also not doing it to the point where we're causing more anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I know for my family, we have these discussions and you can see sometimes in our kids' faces the anxiety when you start talking about, well, you need to don't touch your face today, or, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that you keep your mask on. And so it's hard as a parent. You want to keep your kids safe. You want to keep them understanding and learning and engaging in this, but also not creating some of that anxiety that wasn't there in the beginning.
It's really hard. It's really hard to teach kids the importance of doing some of these, you know, safe behavior kind of things like the hand washing, not touching surfaces without, you know, making them feel more anxious. It's really, really challenging as a parent,
right.
You know.
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, I think you always have to give yourself a little space to know that nothing's going to be done perfectly, you know, and really just kind of dive into it as this is your family, you're just trying to work together to, you know, keep going for the next day and keeping everyone safe around you. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about a little bit about how you can create some of that structure for a family during your day, and kind of what that might look like if you, you know, are craving a little bit more of that. Do you have any suggestions or strategies that you've used for your family?
I think having, you know, some kids respond well to having that structure, and that's why some of them are having a hard time without that structure of school or, you know, organized sports right now. So I think one mm-hmm. of the things that I find helpful is having a visual schedule. And I think having, if you have a small child, if they can't read, or if they're not able to read because of a developmental delay, having a visual schedule is very helpful. So you can have pictures about, you know, what you're going to do in the morning, then if there's any particular activities or appointments. So you can make a visual schedule or whatever kind of schedule your child responds best to have that idea of structure. So I think that you want those kids that respond well to that, you want them to feel like their day still has a beginning and an end.
Sure.
And having that schedule every day might be helpful for some kids. Do you have any suggestions for how you do it for your family?
I really like, you know, your idea of that beginning and end. And I don't know if anyone else out there is like me, but we've completely lost our bedtime and wake-up routines, especially now that school was out. So, you know, I think something important to practice is that week, that 2 weeks before school starts, is start to get into that routine a little mm-hmm. bit. You know, maybe change your wake up time, start, you know, having breakfast at the same time, not changing, going from, you know, a very relaxed day to full structure come August 31st.
Right. No, I think it's really a good point, because I think a lot of times it just feels like there is no structure. It's like one big, you know, holiday with sweatpants and pajamas, which, you know, not a bad thing necessarily, but getting kids back into the routine so they can feel like they're in the routine a few weeks before, school starts back up for certain kids.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And, you know, if you know your school schedule, if you're, you know, those are starting to come out and you're seeing what the school day is going to look like, trying to model your day a little bit after what that school schedule is going to look like. I know a lot of schools, if you're doing cyber online learning, they're trying to have lunch at the same time every day and mm-hmm. Build in breaks. So it's a great thing to start looking at and practicing now.
And I think doing the, you know, having the normal back to school routine you normally have, like when you're doing the, you know, the back to school, perhaps getting ready, getting your materials ready. If you're doing remote learning, setting up a desk and having a space where they're going to be working, it might help kids feel more excited about starting it, especially those kids that are doing all remote and maybe are not going to be seeing their peers as much. It might help them feel more connected to that.
Sure. No, I think that's a great idea. You know, where can we go and what can we do if we feel like we've implemented the structure and, you know, we're ready to face our day, but we're still struggling a little bit mental health wise? Do you have suggestions for our listeners out there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that has been something that's been positive in this whole very difficult, very challenging situation is that telehealth has really expanded. Mm-hmm. So telehealth visits for counseling, they used to be more difficult to get, but since everything was shut down, I think a lot of insurances have given, you know, emergency authorization for telehealth visits. And I've heard mixed things. You know, some people say maybe in the fall, the full telehealth option will go away, but I don't necessarily know if that's the case, because in the fall, you look at having, you know, more of the, you know, flu season and other respiratory illnesses. So I don't foresee that that's going to go away anytime soon. And, you know, the main thing to remember is a lot of physicians and counselors have transitioned to telehealth platforms to provide healthcare to patients, including mental health services during the pandemic. So it makes it easier for parents to seek mental health services for themselves and, you know, for their children. Because a lot of times when people are trying to get in with, you know, a counselor or a therapist for their kids, a common complaint I hear is it's so far.
Sure.
It's really far to drive there with your regular work schedule. So I think telehealth counseling is one option that you can, you know, avail yourself of. You know, if you're able to get online and you don't have any commute time, you're able to get on and talk to someone. Sometimes I found some kids do well with opening up more with that platform. And, you know, there's, you know, virtual playgroups as well. Certain okay. companies have virtual social skills groups for a lot of people whose social skills groups shut down in person options. You know, that is a way to maybe, and for some kids that have more social anxiety, that's a way to feel engaged without having that direct contact. Sure. So it's kind of like a middle ground sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, there's a lot of kids that I work with that are actually very motivated by technology. And so, you know, this time where you're able to access things virtually has been a very positive experience for those children. Can you talk a little bit about just screen time then, I guess, for families? You know, I know with the use of telehealth and being online for school, do you have any recommendations for families of what to do when they're not online?
I think that, so one of the things that we used to have rules for screen time, I don't think anyone has any rules anymore. And if anyone does have rules, I think that, you know, it's not realistic to have those rules right now. So I think that one of the things that is really helpful is, because kids are getting a lot of screen time, you know, in terms of online education, and if they're doing anything virtually like the telehealth visits and so forth, it's really important that you try to have, you know, regular exercise at home. So as you were saying with the screen time, I think it's just not realistic to have specific screen time guidelines, because we're not controlling how much time our kids are spending with screens, you know, between their online education and online playgroups and other things like that. So I think that all we can do is just kind of try to make sure, like you were asking, when they are getting a lot of screen time, when they're not getting screen time, try to have some healthy exercise options. And, you know, even if you're not setting a specific goal and saying we're going to do this much every day, you know, getting to play as much as you can, and physical activities, you know, that you might be able to do indoors also. Like, I don't know if you have particular videos that your kids like, but I've seen a lot of kids doing Cosmic Kids Yoga and like mm-hmm. Go Noodle.
Yeah.
Those seem to be videos that they really like. And again, I just want to specify, we don't get any monetary incentives from any of the companies. These are just things that we have seen kids using that they seem to like.
No, that's great. I'm definitely happy to hear that my children's excessive screen time is okay at this point. Because I know there's a lot of guilt out there for families, you know, when you're trying to work online and trying to find right. something for your kids to do.
Mommy guilt is a whole other podcast. Yes. We'll have to cover that in the future.
We could absolutely do a whole podcast on that. But, you know, I think the yoga videos are great. Getting outside and playing, whatever your child really enjoys, whether it's gardening or yoga or swimming, it's all great activities to just kind of keep in mind and get moving.
I agree. And I think that the other thing, you know, nutrition-wise, you know, I'll just throw this out there. All of us are kind of like comfort eating. Sure. So I think that, you know, the economic challenges of the fact that unhealthy food options are cheaper, they have a longer shelf life. And it's very hard because, you know, with the difficulties that are coming with, you know, the economy right now, it's really hard to find healthy options that are not going to break the bank. So, yeah. You know, one of the things that is helpful is, you know, just remember that frozen fruit and frozen vegetables, canned fruit and canned vegetables are still pretty nutritious. So,
great.
You know, using those as options, you know, if you're reaching for, you know, canned peaches as opposed to like a donut or something like that, that's still a good option to use. So just do what you can. And I know you had mentioned before, Erin, that a lot of times kids can cook with families together.
Absolutely. I think that's another wonderful activity that, you know, you can do as a family is, you know, use those frozen fruits and vegetables and make smoothies and, you know, look at recipes online and come up with things that you can do together. You know, the kids as young as 7 are right. out there chopping vegetables and peeling and with, you know, supervision. So, you know, I think it's another great way to get kids engaged and do something together that right. kind of helps some of that mental health piece that we were talking about initially.
Right.
So we talked a little bit about mental health. Can you talk a little bit about the physical health? I have heard that there's a lot of families right now who are delaying medical care because of appointments being canceled and then, you know, having trouble or being a little scared to come back into the office.
Right. No, I think that is absolutely true. Like, I think that we're seeing a lot of people, you know, having a delay in medical care. The American Academy of Pediatrics put out a statement about this because they want to make sure that kids are not getting behind on vaccines and not having to deal with, you know, another outbreak of a preventable disease while we're in this pandemic already. So sure. I understand parents understandably have concerns about coming in and taking their kids out of the house. But one of the things that is important to know that a lot of pediatricians, family practice physicians, they are doing, you know, a combination of telehealth visits and in-person visits.
Okay.
So if you have, for example, something simple, the office will determine usually if they can see you for a telehealth visit versus if they have to see you in person because, right. You know, as you know, Erin, it's very difficult. You cannot look at ears on the computer.
Sure.
You know, and you can't do like strep tests and other things on the computer. So depending on the particular complaint your child has, sometimes you might be able to be seen with the telehealth platform with your regular doctor.
Okay.
So it's someone you know, your kids have met before. Or what a lot of people are doing is they're putting in place other measures to, you know, decrease the time that you spent in the office. For example, okay. Most places are having parents check in from the car. So you get to the office, you put a phone call into the front desk, you check in from the car, and then when you walk in, they take you straight to a room at most offices. And, you know, so most pediatricians are also staggering visits, so they might be doing well visits at a certain time and sick visits only maybe in the afternoon. So it depends on the particular office.
Okay.
But sure. I think making sure that no one is sitting together in like the waiting area is something that a lot of offices are doing. So they're really making an effort to take you straight to the room.
Right.
And I know some pediatricians are doing this, you know, it just depends. They might, you know, talk to you on a virtual platform about your concerns and other things. Then they might bring you in very briefly for just the checkup.
Okay.
And the vaccines and the measurements and so forth. So everyone is doing it a little bit differently, but I found most people, you know, want to put their patients at ease. So
right.
If you call and you say, I'd really like to do it this way, most people would work with you on it. But I think a lot of times parents don't realize that those are other options out there, that you can actually ask for a combination of these virtual and in-person visits.
I think that's a great suggestion. And, you know, especially with our families with a child with a delay, any change in routine of what it would look like if it's a little bit different than they were there the last time,
right.
You really want to know so that you can prep your child and explain to them the processes that are going to happen. So would you recommend calling before and kind of asking their provider what the visit will look like?
I think that is a really good idea because I know it means some extra, you know, time that you have to take out to do that. But I think if you talk to them ahead of time and they can do it in a way that's most comfortable for you and your child.
Sure.
And then that way, you know, maybe they might say your child might be more open to seeing you in the usual way. So they want to come to the office in the same way they used to.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on the concern, you know, I think you'll find people will work with you on it because our goal is the same, right? Making sure the children stay healthy and making sure they feel comfortable
right.
when they come to the office.
Wonderful.
So do you have any thoughts, you know, in terms of any thoughts regarding how people can approach, you know, if parents have concerns about how their children will respond to an altered schedule, do you have any thoughts about how people could approach that from a standpoint of, you know, pediatrician? Like, are there certain things that you think should be addressed with the family to make it a little bit easier?
You know, I think that's a good question. And again, I think with the visits I've seen so far, a lot of children just kind of need a little bit more wait time than they did before.
Right.
Just to get comfortable in the environment, to know what's going to be expected. I know that in my job, approaching a child, getting down to their level, making sure that they feel really comfortable and safe has been even more important now that they can't see my face and my big smile. You know, all they see is a mask and a person. So, you know, making yourself small and available and friendly, I think is really, really important at this time. And then if your child has anything specific that they tend to do, you know, if you have a child who is a runner, or will tend to shut down, you might want to let your pediatrician know that before you go into the office so that they're prepared and know how to handle the situation.
And I think a lot of times when you're seeing kids in a different format, like if you have masks on and they don't feel like you look like the same person, sometimes having, you can practice putting a mask on a toy.
That's great.
And sometimes I think that makes it a little bit easier. I've seen some people come in with masks on their toys. It is really adorable. But also, you can always ask the pediatrician to check the toy first. Because a lot of times, you know, if kids are scared, I will, if they bring a toy with them, I'll check the toy first.
That's great.
And then I'll do step by step. So I'll listen to the toy's heart, then I'll listen to their heart. So, you know, it's not like a full toy exam and a full child exam. It's like one part of the toy, one part for the child. So it makes it a little bit easier for them.
Wonderful.
But sometimes I will tell you there are children that get very upset. How dare you touch my toy? And sometimes it doesn't work out so well.
I think that's great. And again, that, you know, decreases that anxiety both for the child and for the parent when you have an appointment that goes nice and smooth. So.
Right. Absolutely. So we hope you guys have enjoyed our first podcast. This is our first podcast. I was just telling Erin, I'm sure we're going to be hearing sounds, you know, from our family and, you know, other people that are around, but we are going to do the best we can. We are both working moms, so we will do our best to bring you this information within our own particular constraints. But if everyone has any ideas about other topics that you might want us to cover generally in the future, we are very open to whatever people think might be helpful to hear about.
Absolutely. We're excited to bring on some guests, so let us know what topics you're looking for, and we will search out experts in the field that we can interview and talk to. And, you know, I'm so excited to start this with Alex, and hopefully we'll get some good information out there and have some fun in the process.
Absolutely. All right, everyone, stay safe, stay healthy.